Welcome to Documentary First, an inside look at a documentary filmmaker's journey. I'm your host and a documentary filmmaker myself, Christian Taylor. I'm typically joined by my co-host Jason Rugg, but today he's away looking after some of his family matters. So I'll be holding down the fort on my own. Hopefully we'll be fine. Jason, we miss you and we look forward to seeing you back soon. So hope your family feels better and we miss you. Today, I am so excited because we are joined by a producer and an editor of a film that I hope everybody gets a chance to see called I Fine, in parentheses, Beauty. It's a short, a 30-minute short that for me was eye-opening, and I really do hope that you get to see it. So we're joined by Alex Ivany, and I just want to say, Alex, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's really nice to meet you.
Yeah, thank you, Christian. It's great to meet you. And I just wanted to say how excited I am to have a podcast that's not just dedicated to documentaries, but also you had Ken Burns on the show recently. And he's one of my heroes. I grew up watching him, and that's kind of how I got into documentaries. And I know you share a similar story.
So true.
Thanks so much for having me. And I'm honored to be on the same show that Ken Burns was on.
Well, I was just blown away that he was even here too. It's just so amazing to talk to him in person, but that's the way I feel about you. You know, I look at your work and I think, oh my goodness, he's coming on, taking time to talk with us. I'm really honored. So let me read your bio real quick, just so people know a little bit more about you. Okay. Alex is an editor with a diverse portfolio of credits, including Academy Award nominated and Peabody winning Netflix documentary 13th, directed by Ava DuVernay. Alex Ivany has found growth and healing in his work, which you will be able to see when we talk about this little film I Find, which has predominantly been focused on topics of racial justice and social issues. He has worked as an editor for the award-winning television series Queen Sugar, which centers on the lives of Black American family in rural Louisiana. Ivany was featured in Cine Montage magazine, the Editors Guild official magazine, for his work on the show. In addition to Queen Sugar, Ivany has worked on several projects produced by award-winning filmmaker Ava DuVernay, including the anthology series Cherish the Day, as well as Beyonce's Family Feud music video feature featuring Jay-Z, and a short film for the Smithsonian Museum titled August 28th, A Day in the Life of People, starring Don Cheadle, Regina King, and Angela Bassett. Ivany is a member of the Editors Guild and the Emmy Television Academy. Wow, that's a lot of work in a very short time. You look very young to me if people are watching on video. You don't look old enough to have all of those credits or that life experience. So tell me how this all started. Like, give me a little bit about who Alex is and how you got into this business and, how we got to this moment.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, I'm for the record, I'm 32, so I'm young, but I have a bit of a young looking face anyways. I've always just been really interested in documentaries and filmmaking. Like I mentioned, Ken Burns, I didn't have cable growing up. I had a single mom and she was a working single mom. So it was kind of like, what do you do with this kid when, you know, you're trying to get work done? Put on Ken Burns from the library, and I would just sit there. I watched the baseball series, the jazz series, multiple times. So just had, you know, this sort of foundation of documentary and art. My mom was a photographer too, so I had art kind of all around me. And then, you know, I started picking up a camcorder when I was a teenager, just the little DV tapes, and started filming stuff. And then when I was in high school, I actually was lucky enough to have like a film production class, which is kind of rare for high schools, I feel like.
Yeah. Where did you grow up? Where was this?
I grew up in Santa Cruz in Northern California.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's near San Francisco. It's not a big city. It's a town by the beach. So really beautiful town. And so, yeah, I had an opportunity to start picking up a camcorder and filming stuff. And I did a short documentary for the class about the United Farm Workers, and which was founded by Cesar Chavez, because I was just curious, you know, there's growing up around so many migrant farm workers, just about their lives and, you know, how they're able to survive and organize. And so I delved into that. I was only like 16 and just filmed this documentary that ended up getting into actually a few festivals and doing pretty well. And it kind of, it helped me get into film school. That project helped me get into film school. So I ended up going to Chapman University in Orange County. And I did one of the only documentary majors in the country, actually. There's a lot of film schools, but there's very few with a specific documentary major.
I didn't even know that. I mean, that's good to know. Yeah. I'm so glad you're telling us this on this podcast. There is a college called Chapman in California that is focused on documentary filmmaking. Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. If you're interested in documentary filmmaking, which I assume a lot of your listeners and watchers are, and, you know, if you're looking to go to film school and study that sort of thing, Chapman's a great one. I had, you know, a couple of great professors, Sally Rubin and Jeff Swimmer, who kind of gave me this, you know, foundation. And we were really studied these documentaries from all across the century and, you know, from Nanook of the North to more recent things. And yeah, I had an opportunity there to make a couple of documentaries that, you know, had little festival runs and did, you know, quite well for student films. And so that kind of launched my career into, you know, working on these internships and things like that, that were documentary related. But then I kind of ended up, I had an internship actually on a studio at 20th Century Fox. So I ended up kind of out, you know, getting out of documentaries for a little bit. And I had this studio job and I wasn't loving it. You know, it was very sort of corporate. It wasn't too creative. You know, I wasn't having a lot of opportunity to do what I loved. And I was just, you know, searching for jobs. And one day I was on Facebook and saw this post from someone who I had met at a networking meetup. And it was a job for a documentary as an assistant editor. I was like, oh, this is interesting. You know, I would love to work on a documentary. And it ended up being 13th. So this little Facebook post that I responded to turned into something that kind of, you know, catapulted my career, because obviously 13th ended up on Netflix and was nominated for an Oscar and is, you know, shown in schools and is used as an educational tool. So that really was the foundation for my career as an editor, and, you know, getting into documentaries and all of that. Yeah,
that's just a wonderful story, because really, you know, you're a guy that picked up a camcorder and was interested in filming stuff and, you know, answered a Facebook post. And now here we are. It is really the little things, you know, it's a desire to do something and to say, I'm going to do it. I don't know what I'm doing or how to do it. I'm just going to do it and pursue that passionately. And that networking piece of meeting people and helping other people on their projects that I've always found is the way sort of into, you know, the field that you want to be in. So I congratulate you for that. And I hope our listeners that are trying to get their feet on the ground will look at that example. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, definitely. Networking is so important. Don't be afraid to bother people a little bit and reach out to them and, you know, go to events. I'm in LA, so it's a little bit easier to find networking events than a lot of places, but you know, people are really receptive to just having you reach out to them and ask questions a lot.
Yeah, and you said you found, you know, something on Facebook. I know there I started by with a meetup group. There's actually an online community that does meetup groups, and you meet each other online, but then you can meet in, you know, person. And so that's an artist group in Chicago that I started with. And then there are organizations in just about every town, and there are film communities. Every state has a film office. And so people can look at their film office, and the film office will tell you, you know, what things are around or what events you can go to. And, you know, there are all sorts of associations and things. Women in Film is a national organization that you can join. So, you know, absolutely. Look at Facebook, look online, just pursue your passion and you can find it. The one thing I'm curious about is in high school, you said you started entering these film festivals, and I found filmmaking a very challenging thing because of the money involved. And of course, not knowing how to navigate the waters of, you know, the whole system. So how, as a young person, did you afford to do the things that you did? And how did you end up figuring out, okay, I'm going to put it in film festivals? And talk to me a little bit about how you found your way.
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's always about access, right? Like, mm-hmm. you can have a certain amount of access to it that'll help you get into it. And I was lucky enough to have a really supportive mom. You know, it was just her and I. I didn't grow up with my dad, but you know, she would get these camcorders all throughout my childhood, and we didn't have a ton of money, so she would get them for a month at a time, film some stuff, and then return them. And then we finally, you know, when
I've
I was
heard
a
of
teenager, we finally, yeah. So when I was a teenager, we finally had one permanently, and it was like just sitting there in the drawer. So it was the perfect opportunity to do that. And, you know, I've noticed now more and more throughout time, there's more access. Now we have phones, so it's a little easier to just kind of shoot these amateur films. I say amateur because it's, you know, you're just starting out, but they can still be really good quality, even if you're shooting mm-hmm. on a phone and still learning. So yeah, I was just, to answer your question, I just happened to have that opportunity to have the camcorder available and a mom who was excited to support my passion. And, you know, financially, I think the film festivals were a little cheaper because I was a student. So I probably got some discounted.
There is always a student discount when you enter. That's true. I forgot about that. Everybody should look for that when you're entering.
Right. And they were local festivals, so it wasn't like extremely difficult to get into at the time. But then moving forward to film school, actually Chapman has an amazing program in that they also have a festival department. So they have a budget allotted for submitting students' films that they think will do well in festivals to festivals. So I didn't, and I got great financial aid at Chapman. So, you know, if for someone who's looking to go to film school, I would say, you know, don't think you can't do it because of money or something like that, because some of these schools give really good financial aid and are really supportive and just looking for bright young talent.
That's beautiful. Tell me then the most, I would say, defining moment when you feel like this has become who you are. You are a documentary editor. You are a documentary producer. You're no longer now chasing this dream. You are working in this thing that you dreamed about. When did you sort of make that transition?
Well, I feel in a way that I'm still making that transition, right? Because it's been sort of a process of being an editor on different mediums. I've done documentaries, I've done indie feature films, and I've done some narrative TV. So I've been kind of discovering these different mediums and figuring out, you know, how I enjoy them as an editor. And just recently with iFine, I had the opportunity to be a producer on that. So that was a complete learning experience. I kind of had to learn on the go. And it's still a learning experience. And even, even with the film finished, the producing part of it doesn't never stops.
It does not stop. So, that is so true.
Yeah.
That's so true.
You know, as an editor, I'm used to just working this allotted amount of time, and we picture lock, and I might be involved in some of the posts in terms of color and sound and those sort of things. But then the film goes to the world and I'm done.
Right.
But yeah, it's really different being a producer, a lot more hands on, and
that's so true.
You wear a lot of hats for sure.
Absolutely. Well, I think when I say you've made it or you've arrived, there is a difference between doing this as a hobby and making a living doing this. And I would assume now you are able to support yourself on your work. Is that true?
Right. Yeah.
Then you've arrived. You've made it farther than most of us. So congratulations to you about that. And that is a significant milestone, I think, to go from a lot of people when they start out or doing their day job. And, my day job is being a voice actor. And so I do that work, and that work goes into making my films, actually. So I've not yet arrived to the place where you are. Hopefully one day I will. But talk to us about when you made that jump, when you left from being able, scrapping to figure out how you're going to survive to being able to pay yourself and, make a living doing the film work.
Yeah. You mean more so as an editor or?
However you make your money.
Yeah. Right. Well, I guess it was, it's kind of a trickle effect. So I started as an assistant editor. And I kind of always feel like I started out with a bang because my first job, real job as an assistant editor was 13th.
Yeah.
So that was just unreal. And I had a chance to learn from Ava DuVernay and also the editor who I worked with, Spencer Averick, who is just an amazing person and an amazing mentor for me. And he kind of has taken me under his wings throughout the years. And he brought me along as his assistant editor on several different projects. And I just had an amazing opportunity to learn from him. So I was making money as an assistant editor and able to support myself doing that. And, a lot of people stay as assistant editors and they love it. And I totally respect that. But I wanted to edit. I really wanted to edit. I felt, it was a lot of collaboration and creativity involved in editing. And so I guess the moment that I feel like I made it was editing Cherish the Day, which was my first time as a union editor on any sort of large production show. I had been assistant editing, like I said, and Ava brought me in to her office and she was like, I have this new show. Are you ready to edit it? And I was like, my world kind of changed in that moment. Because not only was I jumping into the edit chair, but also, it was a union job and it was just health insurance and all that. So it's like, okay, I'm secure. I'm feeling all right about where I'm at right now. I think there's a difference between sort of making it in terms of being able to support yourself and making it in terms of being able to tell the stories you want to tell. And I think as artists and filmmakers, we're always like, just never satisfied, I think, in a way. Kind of like we finish that one project and that we're passionate about and we're like, what other things do I want to say?
Yeah.
You almost feel like you never make it.
That's so true. I'm sure if we talk to somebody at the top of their game, Ken Burns probably, I would be crazy. I can't imagine him saying that, but there's probably stuff that he still wants to do all the time. You're right. There is a difference between, you know, making it to support yourself and making it, telling the stories that you want to tell. It looks like you are starting to do that now, with iFine. I think that, I see a lot of your fingerprints all over this, being the producer and the editor. It is a smaller, crew. It looks like it was a passion project. And you know, we have talked to several editors on our show, so I'd like to focus on your producing actually. It is a new position for you. You were learning on the go, so I'd like to ask you about that. Before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about the film. Tell us what iFine is. And you know, it is, in my mind, sort of a Black experience, social justice. It falls into your passion. So I love that. So start by telling us how you got into, you know, these films that you were super passionate about, what led you in that direction, and then how iFine was born out of that.
So I would say that I've always been more or less really passionate about just social justice issues and things like that. A lot of my family was very politically active and vocal about those sort of things growing up. So I kind of had that foundation. But then when I worked on 13th, it was, you know, just an eye-opener for me as a human being and also as a biracial person who my dad is Black, and I didn't really get to know that side and get to understand the true, you know, the history of Black people in this country. And it was just an eye-opener to me to research it and go through all of those archives. It's a heavy archival footage documentary, so I was seeing a lot of footage that was hard to watch. And it, you know, made me angry and sad and all kinds of emotions. And it just kind of stirred up this thing inside of me that just really wanted to tell these stories, not just because they're important, but because I didn't, you know, I felt almost betrayed that I didn't know the full extent of this history. And I just think documentaries are such a powerful tool for that. Film in general, I think, is, but documentaries specifically, because they're kind of combining all these elements of history, journalism, anthropology. You know, you're using different sciences in a way to create this art form.
Sure.
So that was kind of the fire that went off, I'd like to say. And then ever since then, I've, you know, sort of pursued those types of projects. And anytime I have the opportunity to meet, you know, another filmmaker who's working in that area. And you know, it's not just social justice and racial justice. I think it's just any story that is of people who are either marginalized or underrepresented in media. You know, I recently worked on a documentary that's disability related. So it's, you know, it's just, I just love telling stories that are eye-opening to people and, you know, help people not feel like they're in the dark, like I kind of felt like at that certain moment in time.
Well, you actually absolutely succeeded with iFind, because when I watched this, I felt the same way. I was like, how do I not know this? It is so shocking that I was blind to what was going on. And let's just talk about that a little bit. Tell us how you fell into doing this project, and tell us what it's about. Give us the log line and dive in that way.
Definitely. You might hear my cat outside scratching at the door
Mine too.
angrily.
Mine too. It's okay.
Anyways, so iFine is about beauty, at its core. It's in the form, it tells the story of these kids and teenagers in Sierra Leone who are using skin bleaching products to lighten their skins. for, you know, and it touches on their stories, but also why they do this, which is the sort of ingrained colonialism that we have in our society, colonialistic aspect of beauty. And how this film came about was, I'll jump back a couple of years to meeting one of the directors. There's two directors, but I worked with Adisa Sapturi, who directed a feature a few years, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, called Skin in the Game, which I edited. And that was the first feature that I edited. It was his first feature that he directed.
Okay.
So we just, you know, we bonded and became close over the experience and stayed in touch throughout the years. And he has a philanthropy in Sierra Leone, where he's, you know, teaching different arts, and they have a theater program and an arts program. And so he had been going back and forth to Sierra Leone. And one thing he had developed is a play, or he had asked the kids if they wanted to do a play. And they said, yeah, they wanted to do a play. And the topic they decided to do was about skin bleaching, which was really affecting a lot of them, whether it was them skin bleaching or family members. And these were just kids and teenagers in Sierra Leone. And so originally the idea was to do a documentary about this play. So he went out there and started filming some pre-interviews, and then he got in touch with me about editing it, actually. And, you know, it was one of those things, like you said, a labor of love, passion project, where there wasn't a ton of budget. It was independent. And he told me about the topic, and I was totally shocked. Like, I had never really known anything about this. And it's something, you know, we all struggle with beauty standards and, you know, what is beauty? That's the real question. What is beauty? And that's what this documentary was exploring, is, you know, what makes you beautiful? Is it just a certain skin tone? And it's not. So I came on board as editor. But like I said, it was low budget. So he asked, can you do this? For this budget, I'm sorry, you know, we don't have more. And I was like, Adisa and Ebony Gilbert is the co-director. You know, I love the project. I just really want to be a part of it. And not only do I want to edit it, but like, I want to just help you make this whole film happen and use my knowledge in post-production as an editor to help get it to the finish line. And they were really excited. And so, you know, I hopped on board as editor producer, which, it was a new hat for me. I'm just used to the editor side of things. So the producing came in. It was a lot of finding the team. We had an amazing composer, Rashai, who's extremely talented. Our colorist, Adrian Delude, amazing colorist, and our sound guy, Scott, I'm blanking on his last name right now, but we just kind of put together this amazing team. And also, you know, we had this process in the editing where we would test it. We would have test screenings and get feedback and notes. So we organized these test screenings that were just amazing, because after each test screening, it would just spark so much discussion, hours of discussion, from so many perspectives and experiences. So it was really gratifying to see that it was already sparking discussion and kind of helped us, you know, formulate the story. So
yeah, you know, it struck me that it wasn't just about beauty. It was also about identity. Identity, longing, acceptance, love, all wrapped up or tied to the color of our skin. And it really broke my heart. It was also interesting because it convicted me. I have been to tanning salons. I have used tanning creams. How crazy is that? That here we are as white people trying to make ourselves brown, and you have brown people that are trying to make themselves white. And there's something really not right about that. And I was convicted about that myself as I looked at the bigger picture, you know, from someone on the outside of, you know, this situation in Sierra Leone. So I think, you know, it was a beautiful thing to address. I'm sure it can't be easy to produce. You are talking about, you know, a different country, a different language. There are so many things involved in this filming. As a producer, you know, what kind of producer were you? What did your job entail? What were the successes and what were the challenges?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely different types of producers. There's line producers who are dealing more with budget and all of that. I definitely wasn't that type of producer.
Me either. Yeah.
Maybe on a different project I'll be, but for this one in particular, I was more of a creative producer, helping formulate the story and, you know, really have discussions about it with the directors. And then, you know, a lot of it in a way was post-producing, you know, giving, because a lot of projects I have an assistant editor on and a post producer. So it's more of a infrastructure, more of a team for, the post, you know, the post workflow. So for this one, it was just me. I was, you know, delivering to the sound and color teams and doing sort of the assistant editor work while also doing sort of the post producer work, which is, you know, communicating between them and figuring out the deliverables. So there was a creative storytelling aspect to the producing, but there was also a very technical aspect to the producing. And then also just, you know, delivering to festivals and DCPs and things like that, where it's, you know, it just comes under the wheelhouse of my knowledge as an editor, that it was kind of natural for me to help with all of those things and, I, you know, help Adisa and Ebony get it to the finish line. There was a lot of that.
I can't tell you how many times I feel absolutely horrible for going back to Bill Ebel, my editor, and saying, I need this kind of file, or can you make me this? Or what would it look like if we exported this way? It's true. If you had that dual skill of being able to kind of post-produce plus deliver as an editor, it does make things easier and less expensive. But on that person, it's a big load to carry for both of those things, for sure.
Yeah. It's a huge cost cutter. And then also in, you know, also once the film is finished, you know, with marketing and things like that, it helps that I'm kind of able to cut a trailer and some, we've done some marketing videos and some graphics and things like that, that, you know, normally when you're just an editor on a project, it's like, it's done, my work is done, don't ask me to do that sort of stuff. But when you're, it feels like it's your, you know, your project also, you are passionate to do all that and you're kind of put, you know, getting a head start on certain things like that. Just self-promotion of the film and, because it still isn't, we actually are nominated for a NAACP award recently. So we're really honored.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But it's still actually not, even available to the public or distributed. So that's a struggle that in and of itself, where it's like finding the proper distribution to get it to the world, because that's ultimately the goal, is you want the world to see it.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about where you are in the life cycle of this film. And for those that are new, there is a life cycle. You know, there is research and development, pre-production, principal, then there's post-production. Then there is the film festival circuit, if you choose to do that, or the distribution. And typically after, you know, the film festival run can last about a year to 18 months, and then your film is released. And it is out there for about a year before it becomes old. And so talk to us about the life cycle of your film and where you are right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, we're kind of at that phase where we're looking to get it out to the world. We've done the festival circuit. We premiered at Santa Barbara International Film Festival last February. So it's been almost... yeah, it's been a year. So it's, you know, it's time. We had a lot of great festival experiences.
How did you do? And tell me some of your favorites. We like promoting festivals here.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Santa Barbara was great. One of my favorite festivals is Pan Africa Film Festival.
Okay.
Which is here in LA, actually. And it's an amazing experience. The audience is so engaged, and it helps that we won some awards at that festival too. So that made the experience sure. a little bit nicer. But yeah, I love that festival, and Beverly Hills was really nice too. They were great for us. It's been extremely well received in a lot of Black film, specifically Black film festivals all throughout the country. And we had a chance to take it back to Africa, back to Sierra Leone. There was a film festival there that we won an award at. So we had a chance to screen it for the characters who are in the film, and some of the crew, a lot of the crew actually was based in Sierra Leone. So we had a chance to do that. And then it's won some human rights awards. And it was also nominated for a African Academy Award.
Wow.
So yeah, so it's done quite well. We're really excited about, you know, how it's been received, and the audiences that have seen it have really loved it. So we're ready to get it to the world, you know, because there's kind of that festival going audience that's very niche filmmaker, you right. know, lovers. But the goal is to get it to a wider array of eyes.
Yes. Is there anywhere people can watch it now or see a trailer?
Yeah, the trailer is on Vimeo. That is public. If you search I Find Beauty on Vimeo, I think it's on YouTube also. And then
I find, I-F-I-N-E, just like it sounds. And then beauty, right. of course. So that's right. how you'd search it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, the film actually is not available yet. We hope to get it out. We have a private screener. So if anyone watching this or listening to it is interested, then you can, you know, reach out to me. And I'll send you a screener.
So, or you can reach out to me too, and I can put you in touch. Tell us about your socials. Where can people find you and interact with you?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. You can just search my name, Alex Ivany, or my app is Ivany Avenue, Ivany underscore Avenue. And then I don't know. I mean, you can list my email in the, I don't know if there's a notes section or anything.
Yeah, we'll
like
put
that.
A notes section. Beautiful. We'll do that.
Okay, great.
Now, yeah. I'm super curious. How did the cast members in Sierra Leone receive the film? What did they think?
Well, they loved it. I mean, they felt like celebrities, and they were honored just to see themselves on the big screen like that. And we hope to bring them out here to the US at some point soon to screen it here and have a big party for it. But yeah, I think they loved it. And we're really incredibly fortunate for them, because this film wouldn't have been what it is without them. Obviously, you know, your characters are your characters, but not only that, is they just poured their hearts out to us, and they really, they were open and really vulnerable. And, you know, I think it's because it was such a small team, and, you know, Adisa, like I said, already had ties to the community. It kind of gave this openness where it was just, there was just so much access, and they were so willing to share. Whereas if it was a big, you know, a big crew, big documentary crew, it just would have been so intimidating, and the story just, it wouldn't have been the same. So, you know, we're so grateful for those kids and teenagers, and, you know, we still stay in touch. We have a WhatsApp group text, and, you know,
awesome.
Yeah.
Did any of them decide to stop bleaching?
That's a great question. I know that one of them for sure has. I don't know what the status is on her now. I know that one of the girls is bleaching more, actually. And
why?
It's difficult there, because now it's like, we think, as I guess in America here, we think of Africa as being like, there's, you know, they have no communication to the rest of the world, but they really do. They have cell phones, they have access to what the public, you know, sees in magazines and advertisements. So they see the same things we see, which is this beauty standard, which is constantly changing. I mean, I think it's changed in my lifetime, and it continues to change, but it's just in their faces. So to have that power to say, you know, I am beautiful, which is what we're trying to enunciate in this film, is, you know, you are beautiful. It's really difficult for some of them, you know, with all of those influences. And you can definitely notice, you know, changes in their skin tone and damages to the skin, and the skin becomes more translucent. And then, you know, without giving away the film, there are some things in there that are, you know, specific to that.
And shocking, I will say, for sure. All right, we're going to wrap it up here quickly. But before we go, I would wonder if you could give us, let's say, three tips for new listeners, new filmmakers. Think about three things if a young filmmaker was to come to you and say, how can I, quote unquote, make it? How can I, you know, do this as a living? What are your three tips?
Yeah. So, I mean, the one I always give, specifically for, you know, if you're starting out, and it works especially well if you're on the younger side and people kind of view you on the younger side, it's just asking questions a lot. People are really open to young up and comers asking questions. They actually feel good about it, that they have something to give knowledge wise. And so it's actually, I find it's really hard to bother people with questions about their career or how, you know, things that will benefit you. And yeah, so I just, when I was starting out, I was asking all the questions I could to everyone who was more experienced than me, which was everyone. and then, you know, I guess another one is, I mean, there's the 10,000 hours thing. We always hear about that, but
it's tell like, me about that. I actually haven't heard that.
Oh, really? Well, yeah. Just putting in the 10,000 hours of practice on your craft, gives you that sort of experience to be good at it. They say, but I feel while that's true, I think that's kind of
overwhelming.
Making it small. Overwhelming, but it's kind of making something smaller because not everyone has access to even start the thing in the beginning, in the first place, sort of what we talked about earlier. So I guess I think my advice would always kind of be personalized to the specific person starting out and how much access they have, because it's like if you have access to filmmaking tools and things like that, then yeah, just go and do it and make mistakes. But if you don't, you have to be a little more creative, unfortunately, with how you're going to get that access. So I can't really say if there's, I can't give kind of across the board generalized advice. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Well, that's two already. So do you have one more? I can think of one more that we talked about. We can kind of sum up. And that was networking. That's what you said, networking. Yeah. And that's another really huge one.
I was just going to add, having a great mentor, to look out for you and have your back and teach you things is similar to networking, but yeah, having a great mentor
is invaluable.
Really
invaluable. Yeah. And I will say to add to all of this, I think the way that you get there is oftentimes just getting involved and helping other people. In my experience, there have been lots of people that volunteered to help make The Girl Who Wore Freedom, who are volunteering to make the second film, Heroes of Carentan. And they come here and we give them the opportunity to practice whatever craft they're interested in so that they can walk away from this project having, accomplished something and, gained a skill and work product. And we weren't able to pay them, but we were able to give them that kind of experience, that kind of the stuff to put on their resume. So volunteering is a very important, I think, way to network, help other people learn, make connections in the industry. So that's another one I would throw in there.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a great one. And listen to this podcast too.
Yes, and listen to
education.
This podcast.
Yeah. Your education's never done. Yeah.
So true.
It's great that you have this podcast and, bring amazing people on like Ken Burns and lots of talented other people.
Well,
so
I'm going to say you too. One of the things that I love is that we haven't had enough people on here who are focused on social justice and the Black experience. And I grew up in rural South Mississippi where the Black experience was a nightmare. And I am embarrassed to be part of that community and really desire to have that exposed and for people to learn what that experience is like. I just think we don't know enough and we still haven't learned in order to change things and to make a difference. So thank you for your voice, for what you're doing, for the stories that you're telling. I applaud you, and we look forward to promoting your film and seeing where it goes.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Alex, it is now time for our special series, DocuView Deja Vu, where we ask you to bring a documentary to recommend. Talk to me about one or two documentaries that you were really passionate about that you want others to know about.
Yeah. I have a couple I'm going to give. One was done, I think, a little over 10 years ago. And you may have seen it. It's called Searching for Sugarman.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure if it's available streaming. I think it might be on Apple Plus. But it's an amazing documentary that is sort of done in the form of a mystery about this musician who has, I'll just say, has all sorts of rumors surrounding his death, And I'm doing air quotes if you're not watching. And then his music and how it kind of traveled the world and became famous in South Africa when it wasn't famous here in the USA. And then two super fans who are uncovering this story. So it's sort of told in the form of a mystery, and it's beautifully edited, beautifully shot. Just all the crafts are exquisite, and then just the storytelling style is just amazing. How it's kind of like you're learning things around each corner. So
That
I
sounds
would
awesome.
highly recommend that one. And then
Do
the
you know
other
where you can
one,
find it?
I think it's on Apple Plus. I'm not positive
Okay.
about that. You might be able to look on Amazon Prime. Maybe it's a rental or something like that.
We'll find it and put it in the show
Yeah,
notes.
you might have to
Okay.
investigate a little bit.
So tell me your second one.
The other one, it just came out recently. It's actually nominated for an Oscar in the short documentary category. It's called The Last Repair Shop. And this is a beautiful 40-minute documentary about this repair shop and the workers there repairing these instruments for students. It's the last repair shop in, I think, California or Los Angeles. But really, at its heart, it's a story about people repairing themselves, told through, the repairs of these instruments in this shop. And it's just so beautifully told. And that's available on YouTube, I'm pretty sure. It's a New York Times, or no, it's not New York Times. It's actually available on Netflix. It's either Netflix or YouTube. It's definitely available on one
We'll
of the
link it
two.
up and we'll put the
Yeah.
link in the show notes. Great.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for that. Okay, well, my recommendation is going to be The Trial of Adolf Eichmann. This is not a heartwarming film, I have to tell you. It is hard to watch, but it is important to watch. The director is Michael Prazan or Mikkel Prazan. He wrote it also. It stars David Brinkley, Edward Asner, Brian Bedford, and you can see it on Netflix. It is actual trial footage, and it's just very, very emotional because it is held in Israel, and it gives the victims the opportunity to confront Adolf Eichmann. There's nothing to replace watching history with your own eyes and making your own determinations about what you see and think and feel. And that's why I recommend this film. I was just like your film, Alex. I was completely shocked by the things that I learned, even though I've heard the Jewish Holocaust horror story so many times. There's still always more to learn that just blows your mind about man's inhumanity to man. And I think it's important to remind ourselves, how we as humans can get there if we don't watch ourselves and we don't focus on being kind to people. So, The Trial of Adolf Eichmann, you can find that on Netflix. So that's my recommendation for today.
I'm gonna have to check that out. Wow,
Yeah,
that sounds really interesting. And
it's interesting, but hard to watch.
I'm sure. I have a lot of my mom's, my family, my mom's on my mom's side are Holocaust survivors, and I have some tapes, some footage, both from other foundations and some that I filmed when I was a teenager of them that I hope to turn to a documentary someday. So, that I definitely want to watch that and study that one. That sounds really
And
interesting.
I'm volunteering to help you on that project. I would love that.
Oh, okay.
That
I
would be
love it. That's
amazing.
great. Yeah, thank you. And yeah, if you have any projects you're working on, let me know, and we can collaborate.
Networking, baby. Gotta love it.
Yeah, networking.
All right, well, we're going to ask you to hold on because we want to do something special for our Patreon audience. So I've got a question to ask you, and if you'll stick around for a few more minutes, we'll give them something special. Well, everybody, we really love having you here. Thank you so much for listening. Please do follow us on social media at Documentary First. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. Apparently, a lot of people have been following us on TikTok. We are putting up history stories, but we do also share these podcasts and clips from the podcast. And if you're up for it, join us on Patreon. We are starting a small little community of people who believe in the filmmaking that we are doing. We really value your support. Right now, we're running on fumes and a lot of volunteer work. So having people join our mission is vitally important. So thank you for listening to Documentary First, where we believe everyone has a story to tell, and you can be the one to tell it. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Documentary First. We really appreciate your partnership with us. We can't do any of this without you. So thank you for listening, donating, and following along on our journey. We are supported by generous donations from people just like you. To make a donation, visit thegirlwhowarefreedom.com or support us on Patreon at patreon.com/documentaryfirst. To learn more about our other works in progress, visit documentaryfirst.com or follow Documentary First on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. This podcast was produced by Documentary First, edited and mixed by Jason Hoban, with music by Jeff Kurtenacker.